I am from the dream world in my own conception. I mean, I was born and grew up in Australia, the country of the dream time. You know, the dream time of the Aborigines.
Oh, yes, that's right.
And, you know, as a kid, I was a pretty sickly kid. I kept sort of trying to check out. We didn't actually have the phrase near-death experience when I was growing up in Australia. Raymond Moody hadn't written his first book on that subject at that time. So the Australian doctors would just say, oh, poor kid, he checked out again, didn't he? He died for a little while and came back. And those experiences, as other near-death survivors will well understand, changed my perception of reality. I mean, I knew I couldn't escape the knowledge that there's a world beyond the physical world. I couldn't escape the knowledge that we have bodies beyond the physical body. We have an energy body and an astral body and so on, because these are things I traveled in as a kid. I didn't particularly want to, but I was out there. And one of these experiences, I'm 9 years old, I'm in a hospital in Melbourne. I just had an emergency operation to get my appendix out because it was about to burst. I've been in hospital for pneumonia several times before that. I'm wandering down the corridor of the hospital. My physical body is on the operating table, but I can't stand the blood and the pain and the gossip of the nurses. So I'm wandering down the hall of the hospital in my, I guess, in my energy body, in my astral body. I see my mother grieving, and there's something coming in and out of her heart like a bird. And I don't want to look at her grief, so I go to the window. And I want to have some fun. I want to be a kid. I'm 9 years old. I want to go down to the fun park. So I somehow go through the window. And I go to Luna Park in Melbourne. It's got a great big moon-round face at the entrance to the park. And I think I'll ride on the ghost train, etc., for free. I'll look at the girls. And my intention, I don't understand what's happening. My intention is just to have some fun and fool around at the fun park. And suddenly I'm sucked into another world, a world that seems to be inside our one. The people are long and tall and pale and beautiful. And they receive me as a friend, and they adopt me, and I live among them. And I grow up to a ripe old age and become a father and grandfather and an elder and some kind of shaman, I guess. And I've forgotten about the body I left in the operating theater in Australia. And I guess I'm in my 90s when the body's used up and I'm cremated and I go up on the smoke. And suddenly I'm sucked back into the body of a 9-year-old boy lying on the operating table in the Albert Hospital in Melbourne.
Did you not want to come back?
I don't think so. I think actually I'd forgotten that I had this body of a 9-year-old boy, and I'd been living a pretty good life as a man in a different kind of world. And, you know, the world that I was in that body was a world of pain. I mean, it was perfectly, I mean, I had a perfectly nice family situation, a bit boring, a bit mild, a bit bland, but it was okay. But I didn't particularly want to come back, but I was sent back. And you've had an experience like that. You're living in a conservative era, in a conservative corner of that time. Who do you talk to? The only person I could talk to safely at that time was an Aboriginal kid who was very matter-of-fact about these things. Oh, yeah, we do that kind of thing. We get sick, we go off to world of the Mimi spirits, and then we stay there till we get well, then we come back. So, you know, from experiences like that in childhood, I've known through my own experience from the earliest years that I can remember that there are worlds beyond the physical, and we can go there. And I've learned since childhood that you don't actually have to go through the extremity of the near-death experience to know those worlds. You can do it more safely, you can do it more comfortably, and the easiest way to do it is to start waking up to what's going on when you're dreaming.
You sound enlightened, and you could feel just the karma coming from you, Robert. So I'm not sure you might have experienced this, but also in this state, is there a dark side to all of this?
Well, the dark side that we're going to, there's a dark side to everything, of course. You can't have a universe that's all light, or else you wouldn't see the light. I mean, light carries shadow. Shadow and light travel together. Is there a dark side to dreaming? Well, where you go in dreaming, what you encounter in dreaming is connected to your intentions, your choices, your desires, your appetites, just as it is in physical life, you know? There are people who think that it's fun to hang out in a certain kind of bar or a certain kind of crack house, or a certain kind of porn palace or whatever, which might be hells to some of us, they'd be hells to me, and they choose those places because that's where their appetites and desires take them. In dreaming, it's the same. There are bad neighborhoods in the dream world just as there are in ordinary life. In that sense, there's a dark side.
How did you finally realize that the dream world may be just as real as the world we're in now?
Well, one of the things that has coached me in that is experiences in which I've been present, I believe, not only at events before they take place on the physical plane. In other words, I've seen events before they manifested in the physical plane, but I felt that events are being created in another order of reality before they manifest. But when you start to feel that you have access in a certain state of consciousness that I will call dreaming, to the creation of events in this world, then you start asking yourself about the nature of reality. Just suppose that every event, every situation we encounter in waking life begins fundamentally somewhere else. I've been keeping dream journals for a very long time, George, and what I've been able to track is that I have dreamed events years, decades before they manifested in this world. And as I become more conscious of that, I'm sometimes able to choose how those events will play out. So that's one way of coming to the realization that the dream world is at least as real and maybe more real than what goes on in this life.
Sometime tonight I want to ask you what you think it is, because I think that's the key to a lot of the things we're going through right now. You know, I dream a lot, I think, Robert. I don't remember them as much as I used to when I was younger. Why is that?
Well, part of it is the choice we make about what we're going to do with our waking time, of course. You know, what are we going to do first thing in the day? If we're going to, you know, have to get out of bed right away and don't have a little time to linger and languor in bed and wiggle around and let the dreams come back to us, then they're likely to be interrupted. I think you are a dreamer. You've already given us some impeccable and wise advice on dreaming. Mm-hmm. But a lot of us in our society are blocked by fear, you know. Let me put it this way. Let me put it as gently as I can. You know, we all have a control freak somewhere in our ego, you know, the part of us that doesn't want to let anything else take charge, doesn't want to encounter a larger self or a larger perspective. And the control freak that lives in our little everyday mind is terrified of the big self, you know, the deeper self with its wiser knowledge and its challenges to us to get in touch with some deeper purpose. And that part of us is fearful. Let me give you a quick example. When I started living in this country, I started dreaming of the bear, you know, the bear. I don't remember having such important dreams about the bear when I was living in Australia or in Europe. In some of these dreams, there's this enormous bear who is in my space. And I'm scared of the bear because the bear is so much bigger than me. I mean, mm-hmm. I feel like a midget compared to this enormous animal. It's not threatening me, but I'm nervous because it's so big. It's so much bigger than me. And finally, I say to myself, hey, Robert, go back into this space and confront this animal, this bear, and see what it's doing in your territory. So I'm sitting in an easy chair, and my intention is to re-enter the dream, which is the basic technique I teach, going back inside the dream space and confronting a fear or dialoguing with a dream character. I'm back inside my dream. There's the bear. I can smell it. It's feral. It's rank. It's huge. The claws are out. It's scary. And it takes some act of courage, some minimal courage, to brave up and step up to the bear. And when I do that and accept the bear hug, the great embrace, we're suddenly the same size and I feel much better. And the bear wants me to look down at the heart. And I look down at the heart and I see that the bear and I are joined at the heart by something like a thick umbilical pumping life force back and forth. And I dance with the bear and the bear says, call on me and I'll show you what people need to be healed. Now, I didn't know at that time, because I was new to North America, I didn't understand that the bear is the great medicine animal of Native American peoples. It's the medicine animal, the animal spirit of this country. And most Native peoples of this continent, when they want to call in healing, when they want alternative medicine, they call on the bear and all that it represents.
Exactly.
I realized in that experience that I had been running away from, dodging, something that was a deeper aspect of a power of healing that was available to me and, of course, to many, many other people. I was running away from it simply because it was much bigger than I was in my everyday attitudes.